This is a semi-weekly podcast to update you on the volcanic activity of the weeks. I'm one of your hosts, Alessandro Musu.
And I'm your other host, Corinne Jorgensen. We're PhD students at the University of Geneva.
We study volcanoes and are here to give you all the hot volcano news.
First, the focus of the week, and then the volcano news from the last 2 weeks.
Let's get to it.
Okay, so this week's focus comes from a really cool article that I heard about at a barbecue this summer, of all places. Shout out to Jack Giannotti for the cool article. It's about some really interesting interdisciplinary work about volcanoes and the fall of the Ptolemaic Kingdom. We'll link the article and the paper in our Twitter if any of you guys are interested.
In the winter of 43 BCE, Mount Okmok erupted. Mount Okmok is a basaltic shield volcano as part of the Aleutian Island chain formed in Alaska. This volcano has two overlapping calderas which produce dacitic pyroclastic flows. Okmok last erupted in 2008, though there hasn't been much to report since 2009. Okmok is kind of in the middle of nowhere. According to Smithsonian Global Volcanism Program, there are 4 people living within 100 kilometers of it.
When it erupted in 43 BCE, it was one of the largest eruptions in the Northern Hemisphere in the last 2,500 years. And this caused a drop in global temperature, which lasted a decade. Okay, so how do we know this, you might be wondering? Well, scientists have a host of reasons to determine this. Well-dated ice cores record the temperature, and climate proxies such as tree rings and speleothems tells of a 2 to 3 degrees of summertime cooling in the years after the eruption.
These temperature flux had lasting effect on an unlikely place, Egypt. Prior to the 19th and the 20th century, when dams were built, the Nile would flood each summer, and this made farming possible.
In fact, this was something that was closely measured and recorded with a device called Nilometer, which tracked the water's height. And this info would be communicated through the region so farmers would plan their planting. In times of drought and reduced flooding, times were really tough. There would be unrest, famine, disease, and also this has been reported to coincide with large-scale organized revolts.
How did the eruption change the climate? Well, this is complicated, and we will do another episode on it. Actually, if you are or know someone who works on volcanic climate science who would want to be interviewed, please let us know.
But the quick version is that sulfur dioxide is the big culprit. When sulfur dioxide reaches the stratosphere, it can reduce the sunlight that reaches Earth's surface, leading to cooler temperatures and subsequent changes in high and low pressure systems, which in turn can affect wind, rain, and climate conditions.
Now, if you know your history, well, you know that 43 BCE is right at the crucial time for the most famous Egyptian, Cleopatra. And we will say that history is complicated, so we are going to give you the short version here. But obviously, there are many details we are missing.
Okay, so Cleopatra started ruling in 51 BCE when she was just 18 years old, and she was co-ruling with her 10-year-old brother. Around 46 to 45 BCE, she started having a thing with Julius Caesar. The girl needed to get a Roman alliance and some power. She's got her priorities. But of course, in 44 BCE, the Ides of March came and Caesar was assassinated. And this triggered a struggle for the region for the next 17 years. So her lover got assassinated, the girl is trying to rule and also figure out her next Roman alliance. Hello, Mark Antony. But then Okmok erupted and the temperature flux caused the Nile to stop flooding. And this, as we just discussed, caused lots of unrest. So not so good for our girl Cleopatra, who was already struggling quite a bit. Actually, after Cleopatra's death in 30 BCE, which is actually rumored to be murder or potentially suicide from potentially a cobra or just other poisons. Anyways, this marked an end of the Hellenistic period and the Ptolemaic rule of Egypt. And Egypt actually became a province of Rome.
Of course, this is a very large eruption. We are talking about a VEI 6. And of course, the Nile now has in place system to regulate the flooding. But we can still see this as somewhat of a cautionary tale for our climate. Small temperature fluctuation can have long and lasting impact on human society. Just look at what happens to Cleopatra and the fall of the ancient Egypt.
Okay, that's it for the focus for this week. Special thanks again to Zach for telling me about this cool story. Also thanks to the sources for this focus, the Yale Climate Connection blog titled The Volcanic Eruption in Alaska That Rocked Ancient Egypt by Jennifer Marlon and Joseph Manning, the McConnell et al. 2020 paper, both of these we'll link in our Twitter, the Smithsonian Global Volcanism Program, and the Wikipedia article on Cleopatra.
So now it's time for the news.
It's October 25th at the time of recording, and here are your quick updates.
Let's start in the Americas, where we saw ash advisories from Reventador, Nevado de Chien, Sangay, Sabancaya, Fuego, Reventador, Popocatépetl, Nevado de Ruiz, and Cotopaxi. Corinne, would you like to guess the podium for the tallest plume in the American competition?
Okay, I'm going to give a controversial guess.
Okay.
I'm going to guess it's Cotopaxi wins.
Okay.
Popocatépetl is second.
Okay.
And Sabancaya is third. This is my guess.
Okay. Somehow almost. So we have at the third position Sangay with a 7.6 tall ash plume. At the second position, the new entry for these past 2 weeks, Cotopaxi, with a crazy 8.5 tall plume. And the gold medal goes to Sabancaya with a 8.8 tall plume.
The one week that I don't believe in my girl Sabancaya.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
man.
Yeah,
she must feel so betrayed. I'm sorry, Sabancaya.
She's potentially thought, what does Cotopaxi want in this competition? He arrives with 8.5. He didn't understand who is gonna rule the game here.
Amazing.
So, well, we will open the American news with the unrest at Mauna Loa in Big Island, Hawaii, where elevated seismic activity has been recorded. On October 14th, two main earthquakes took place around 9 a.m. local time, with magnitudes of about 4.6 and 5.0.
Okay, these two main events have been followed by seismic swarms of moderate magnitude. The gas emissions at fumaroles is at stable levels, while the ground deformation data underlies an ongoing uplift which started in mid-September. For the moment, there is no indication of an imminent eruption.
As reported by the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory and VolcanoDiscovery.com, is there an arrest state potentially due to a magma injection between 3 and 8 kilometers of depth? There are no evidence or sign of imminent eruption at the moment, but of course we will keep you updated.
Okay, even though it was not enough to win the world competition, Nevado de Chien is producing stronger than usual activity with a strong explosions. In particular, there was a larger one produced at Pumice and Ashflow on October 16th.
America was pretty busy with this week. During the past month, we saw an increase of activity at Villa Rica in Chile. The volcanic activity saw a further increase on October 17th with a small lava fountain and explosions. Lava fountains, that remind me of a volcano we are not chatting about since a while now.
My man, you're obsessed with her.
No, absolutely no. I miss my man. But our favorite Mamuza is not the only one who is quiet. Also, Trident Volcano, Alaska, where seismic activity and tremor activity ceased completely since September 30, is quite down, and the alert level has been lowered to green.
Green is such a beautiful, peaceful color. It's my favorite color.
Yeah, everyone loves green. Also, Mama Edna loves it. For that reason, she's calm.
Okay, Ecuador was not calm these weeks. Cotopaxi, which obviously was on the podium, but there's also ongoing activity at Sangay, where explosions were still going with lava flow running down the southeast flank and ash columns as high as 6.7 kilometers with a maximum of 7.6 reached over these past weeks.
Let's continue in Europe, more precisely in Iceland, where on October 12th, in the Grímsvötn volcanic area, a small flood has been reported at Vatnajökull Glacier from the Iceland Meteorological Office. In the past, we already chatted a little bit about the multiple hazards that glacier floods can generate in volcanic environments, and why scientists might fear eruptive activity after glacier flood events.
Okay, yeah, we chatted about that actually a little bit when we last had a flood, a glacial flood from Grímsvötn, which occurred in December 2021. Fortunately, no eruption followed this flood. Just as a quick recap, glacial floods are actually really quite dangerous for all areas in the paths of the flow. But if that occurs in a volcanic environment, this event can also alter the equilibrium between the volcano and the glacier, and then can potentially trigger an eruption.
This occurs because this event is going to decrease the load on top of the magma plumbing system. This can change the pressure condition of the magma below the surface, allowing gas bubbles to form and increasing the potential of the magma to be erupted. Indeed, as we already said, a flood recently occurred at Grimsvötn in December 2021 without leading to an eruption, but in the past we had cases in this area of glacier flood accompanied by volcanic activity, for example in 1922, in 1934 and in 2004.
Okay, regarding the current activity, on October 13th, the subglacial lake reached a subsidence of 12 meters relative to what it was at on October 5th. Where small earthquakes have also been recorded as well. An increase in a nearby river runoff has been detected starting from October 10th. All the activity has been well monitored by the Institute of Earth Science and the Icelandic Meteorological Office, of course.
The vision color code has been raised to yellow, second on a 4 color scale. The flood peak was recorded on October 16th and it was lower than expected. By October 15th, the subsidence reached 15 meters. And between October 15 and October 16, two small earthquakes around 2.5 of magnitude occurred.
Okay, that's not all that we had in Iceland, though. A seismic swarm also occurred below the Mýrdalsjökull glacier on top of Katla volcano during the third week of October. This quake's magnitude has always been below 3, and of course we'll keep you updated on any future development.
We remain in Europe, but in a less glacial landscape. Specifically, we are flying back to Italy, where we have some updates from Stromboli. The activity seems to be back to the usual Stromboli activity now, but here's some updates on the past 2 weeks' fireworks.
Okay, so on October 12th, the activity remained unchanged with respect to the previous episode's updates, with active lava flows and pyroclastic flows down the Sciarra del Fuoco. The lava flow then stopped on October 14th, but violent spattering activity continued until October 15th, from the northern vents.
It is time for Asia, where we saw ash advisory from Nishinoshima, Suanozajima, Sakurajima, Ebeko, Lewotolo, Alai, Shibulu, Ibu, Shikurashiki, Sumeru, Karinshi, Langla, and Bezimiane. Explosive activity continues at Nishinoshima, where strong ash emission have been detected from satellites.
On October 16th, a strong explosive eruption took place at Shikurashiki in the Kuril Islands with a 4.3 kilometer high plume that extended over 300 kilometers over the skies of the Pacific Ocean.
What's new from Corinne's favorite volcano? Well, the Domeception volcano, also known as Shiveluch in Kamchatka, is still growing its dome inside the dome, inside the dome, inside the dome. The instability of the dome produced some glowing avalanches of lava and blocks, while the dominantly steam effusion reached 4.9 km of height.
We would also like to highlight a particularly strong explosion at Sekurajima on October 18th, with a very dense ash plume as high as 3.7 kilometers and lava bomb ejection as far as 1.3 kilometers.
In Indonesia, Kerinci volcano is quite active and is producing 4.6 kilometer dense ash plume.
We also report an unrest at Bulusan volcano in the Philippines, with an increase in hydrothermal activity, low magnitude seismic swarms, a detected uplift made the alert level raise to 1 on a 0 to 5 scale.
On October 21st, 19 small phreatomagmatic explosions took place at Taal in the Philippines, but the alert level still remains at 1.
At Bezimyami in Kamchatka, there was a new violent eruption on October 23rd with an 8.5 kilometer high plume. Incandescent is visible at the glowing dome, and there's also some nice time-lapse videos published by Volcano Timelapse on Twitter.
Eruptive activity also continues at Krakatau, where we have small explosions, small dark plumes, and also some night glows visible on October 24th.
In the northern Kurils at Alai, a new lava flow has been reported on October 22nd. The lava is traveling down the southern flank. The activity has been followed by some strombolian activity.
And that's it for today. Thanks to our sources, volcanodiscovery.com, the Smithsonian Global Volcanism Program, Icelandic Meteorological Office, and the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. seismic and tremor activity ceased completely since September 30th?
You said ceased, not cease. You said the activity ceased.
Okay, keep it for the end.